Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. We do more varieties and flavors of cheese than anywhere else on Earth. By pushing the boundaries of what cheese can and should be, find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kara Warren, and I'm here with my other awesome co-hosts, Joe Salonia and Jessica Kesselman. On today's episode, we're going to start exploring the year that was, from cheese trends to memorable cheese moments. And of course, we're going to think about what's next for cheese. Guys, let's get into this. You excited for the show?
Are you welcoming me to Cutting the Curd?
No, I'm not welcoming you because you're already here and you're already such a big part of this. And I was like, how do I phrase this? I can't even go like automatic. I was like, I have to rewrite. Okay. Like,
Kara, Joe, welcome to Cutting the Curd.
I know. I said, Jessica and Joe, how excited are you for this episode?
I'm happy to be here with you both.
So excited. So excited. I mean, we're all always moving and on the road, and you know, so when we get to meet up and be in the same room, it's pretty cool.
Also, this is the first time all three of us are in a room recording an episode, which is live. I mean, Joe, you know, you've been the king of live episodes lately, so I'm stoked.
I live a little closer, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I'm amazed because you make the trek in for it, which I love. So we're gonna jump straight into some stuff. I want to hear what your thoughts are. We're gonna go through a few different things and hear everyone's thoughts on each topic. And the first thing is, I want to hear about what you guys thought were cheese trends of the year. So I'll start with Joe because I liked what you had written, and I thought you would be a cool person to start with.
Thank you for the question, Kara.
Okay.
Well, you know, I'm noticing, you couldn't help but notice a little more Tête de Moine going on, right? With the Rosemat. I saw a lot of posts, very post-worthy. A cheese to see, very visual. I thought I saw some more fondue. Saw a little more fondue being posted out there, maybe more talking about fondue. But I don't know if it's a chicken or egg thing, but I have been pushing for bigger wheel cuttings and, through my Gormino job. This year I was pleased with the amount of public, big wheel cuttings we were able to pull off.
Right. Cause you do the giant Emmentaler wheels, right? Is that what you bring in? And just for the listeners, how many pounds is that again?
So Emmentaler AOP, are brought in by boat and they'll average weight.
Okay.
It's around 200 pounds.
Jesus, that's so much cheese.
It takes a lot to move them and get them.
But we're not saying anyone should have that on their cheese board. We're just saying that bigger wheels are better to buy.
You want a piece of it on your cheese board. There's no better, I think that's the most appropriate cheese.
But I agree with you.
But big wheel-wise, it's totally impractical for most places to even think about it. That's the whole idea, is it's a spectacle. And it creates a very cheesy environment. When you have the most cheesiest of raw milk cheeses and it's massive wheel, people can't believe it's real, and then you're going to cut it and people get excited.
And I like that you're talking about it as like an interactive cheese thing. That's kind of what I was going to say was my trend, which is, and it goes to the point about the rosettes for Tête de Moine and like cheese curls, as Bosco pointed out in an episode earlier this year. I'm calling for cheese trends, interactive cheese things is what I want. And I think the ladies on the episode earlier, was it Amelia and Kat maybe that mentioned interactive cheese? And I was like, I freaking love
it's
that
a good
idea.
Word.
I think that's where I'm at on my cheese trend idea. Jessica, I'm going to throw it to you for what your vibe is on cheese trends.
Well, I'm going in a slightly different direction. And I saw a lot of new flavored cheese this year. I think flavored cheese, several of my guests mentioned flavored cheese. And also talked about it being uniquely American. We are obsessed with flavors because I think we're always thinking there has to be something new. It's not just cheese, it's ice cream. It's,
right, sure.
I mean, it's like everything. But the flavored cheese phenomenon, I think this year got a lot more global, and it was reflective in some places by who the cheesemaker is and where their story originated, and then putting that into the cheese. And I'm thinking about the cheesemaker, Huma from White Jasmine, talking about bringing some of the South Asian spice. She talked about she had a tandoori cheddar that was pretty phenomenal.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah.
I think I missed that then. Jesus, wow. Tandoori cheddar. That sounds really cool.
She has a lot of, she talks about her story. She talks about a lot of the flavors and memory and putting those into her cheese. And then also, you know, just talking with Marika about Gouda. She talked about too, about the whole flavor thing.
She has so many great flavors. I finally had the fenugreek.
Fenugreek. I love that. That's a fun spice.
I had never had that. One, I don't know the spice very well. I'm like an alien sometimes. And it was
maple-y.
It is maple-y.
It was, I wasn't expecting that. It was so good. Thank you guys for saying curries. What it was, because I was like, I know I had it. It was different. She also does a smoked cumin.
Yeah.
And that was sensational as well. And a truffle. So, I mean, truffle, I know everyone's tired of truffle sometimes, but it has a place and a time. It's winter. You know,
but that's just the tip of the iceberg. Those flavors, I think, have been around for a while.
Sure, and, definitely.
And but that's the thing about flavored cheese is that there's always room to explore and discover. Even if you've worked in the industry and you think you've tasted all the cheeses that there are out there, there are flavors that are maybe you just never got around to or weren't available at the counter near you. But the innovation around flavored cheese is just really wild. I'm really curious to see, like, where does it go?
One of my favorites, one more shout out on flavored cheese for me, at least, the Beehive Hatch chili.
Oh yeah.
That was good. I got to try that for the first time this year as well. And I also had the honor of interviewing those guys. So all around, it was a good year for me with Beehive. I don't know. Yeah. But that's,
yeah.
So actually, okay. Now moving on to our next subject, I wanted to bring up memorable cheese moments, since I was just talking about one of my favorite moments. It's something that was connected to a prominent cheese festival or an event maybe that you guys went to. Maybe I'll throw it back to you, Jess, if you're ready. What was a memorable cheese moment for you?
Well, I have to say, being in Wisconsin for the Art of Cheese Festival, having the opportunity to go to Uplands, which I think for a lot of people in this industry is like, you know, it's like a pilgrimage to go to the home of Pleasant Ridge Reserve and Rush Creek, and to be there the day they were wrapping the first wheels of Rush Creek, I cried.
Wow, that's fun.
Like, I had tears in my eyes. I got very emotional. It was really beautiful to be in that place and that time and that whole festival.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first year they were running it, and you know, they were one of our sponsors, so it was an opportunity for us to go out there with Heritage Radio Network and do the show from there. But the combination of the people, the place, the product, on paper, reading about the festival, it didn't make the same impact as when I was actually there and seeing how it was integrated with trips out into the field and then having, you know, people from all over the country coming and running seminars, and there were tastings, and it just, the association of terroir. It was terroir everywhere you went in that festival, and it really made an impact on me.
And I would love to just put a teaser out there for the listeners, because I believe from that Art of Cheese Festival in Wisconsin, by the way, one of our sponsors, thank you guys. There's an episode coming up next season, and it's going to be, Jess, you want to just give a quick talk about what that is, like a little teaser for next season, what's coming out?
Yeah, it was, we had two episodes already from the festival because we just talked to so many wonderful people and wanted to share so much of the content. And so we had multiple people interviewed in each one of those episodes. But the third installment from that festival is actually recorded on site at Uplands. We're bringing listeners along with us as if they were there at the festival as part of the group that chose to do the excursion to Uplands. So it's time, you know, with the cows and, you know, with Andy talking about the operation and about the cheese and seasonality and the land and the, you know, everything. It's I'm really excited for it.
I think it's going to be so great. Andy Hatch is one of the most eloquent men of cheese. So I am looking forward to that first episode of the season.
Yeah.
Hearing that. So that's going to be awesome.
I will say, yeah, it's like, you know, when you're a senior in high school and you have to come up with your senior quote, like for the yearbook, and you want to find like the sound bite or the song lyric that kind of encapsulates like your meaning of your life and your experience. Hearing Andy talk about cheese is just filled with those kinds of moments. You're going to want a pen and paper when you listen to this.
Amazing. Okay. I can't wait.
That sounds like a good
Now I hope that the audio came out okay, because I personally haven't really listened to it
yet. Oh my God.
Either.
I'm sure it's fine. We'll talk to the engineers later. Okay, Joe, we got to get to you now on memorable moments of cheese this year. What was yours?
Two stick out for me. It would be just seeing the young cheese shop co-owner, you know, Sarah Simley.
Right?
She won CMI, and she's just her and her husband, Matt. I mean, just such impressive success story to know what these two are up to. I really enjoyed just getting to know their story more, seeing Sarah win. That was a highlight. And also the Bra Cheese Italy, you know, anytime you go to a place like that with the concentration of the people there, the small production, all the raw milk cheese, you know, festival environment, street cheese purchasing. It's just kind of chaos.
But good chaos.
It's a good chaos. You know, there's you're surrounded by espresso shops and limited amount of bathrooms. But the, you know, it's just such an experience to be there. And if you have to work it, then it's like good hard work, but long days. I didn't get to go exploring that much, but for what little I did, it's just fantastic to be there. And
I believe it must be good on both ways. If you work it, or if you're there to tour it with industry people, or you're just a cheese enthusiast, there is no way of losing with the Bra Slow Food Cheese Fest. I think it's amazing. I'm also going to piggyback on that, because that was also what, for me, it was my first time going to it. And I thought it was hands down a very cool experience. I ate buffalo mozzarella on a stick. I thought I went to heaven. Like, you just have to, like, it's like eating a corn on the cob, but with cheese. It is the strangest, most fun thing to do. And then just seeing so many regional Italian cheeses for you to try is like, I don't even know where to start. I'm like, there's multiple tenths of this. What do I do? It was super cool. It was definitely a highlight for me this year.
So, I liked
big up.
I liked hearing Amelia in your last episode, Joe, talking about working it at the Cravero booth. And that was really interesting to hear that experience, and to do it in another language, and to be breaking down wheels of Parm all day. And
with no wire, by the way.
Yeah.
I thought that was amazing. So, just Parm knives. She was brolic. I was like, you're going to be like a bodybuilder.
Yeah,
after
just
this.
Breaking wheels out. And they weren't going to run out of wheels. Say, our booth, we brought a certain amount of cheese, and you don't know how much. So we ran out before the show was over. But in that booth, you're not going to run out, because he's just up the street. They'll just keep bringing more. So you're definitely working for the duration at the Cravero booth.
I wonder what her arms felt like afterwards. Anyway, that's a side note. We're getting distracted.
Yeah.
Next fun, cool thing we want to talk about is Cheesemaker Spotlights, which is basically, you know, what the interviews, what Cheesemaker had a significant impact with the industry. And we thought, you know, really stood out in the interviews that we did this year. For me, it was I had a really tough time making a choice. I also talked about Sarah from Syracuse, Sarah Smiley. You know, I just thought, like, what an incredible new person on the cheese scene. The fact that she was studying to be a doctor and then switched to cheese because of her cheese club. And Jess, that was one of your interviews. I thought it was excellent. It was really, really cool to kind of hear that story. And then my personal one was talking to Allison Lakin of Lakin's Gorge Cheese in Maine. She's a smaller producer that does seaweed in her cheese, the rockweed cheese. And I'm always just amazed at the toughness and the amount of work she's doing to make all that cheese happen. So for me, that was my memorable cheesemaker moments. You know,
I love the idea of seaweed in the cheese. Was there an Irish cheese at some point in time?
Could have been.
That was being made that way. And it was through the middle, almost trying to had a At a quick glance, it might look like a Morbier.
Oh, but you know what? There's
It might not have been.
There's no Morbier in the U.S. So if there's a cheesemaker in Ireland that wants to be imported, maybe that's.
I mean,
that's the end now.
I mean, kind of, if you're near the coast and you're getting sea breeze, and I mean, it makes perfect sense to have seaweed in your cheese.
I think that's another trend.
Did I just write a
there
poem?
We go. There we go.
Did that just rhyme?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe we'll play it back later, and I'll be like, "Yes, Joe, that rhymed."
Well, because Peristead Dairy, they do a cheese where they're using sea salt. Like, there's Atlantis, is that it?
Could be.
I feel there's a couple of cheeses out there that are using
the seaweed bit,
seaweed or sea salt, or you know, trying to
echo. Sea salt's a trend too on cheese. At least it is for butter. I could see that too. Right. Yeah, no, that's right. We're calling another trend, guys, for 2024. Seaweed flavors,
yeah,
more stuff like that. That
because definitely. Trend is like what you're talking about. It's what cheesemakers decide that they want to create. It's in their hearts. It's that they have their artist palette. They're expressing themselves based on a variety of elements, right? That's a trend. Mm-hmm. And then there's the trend of maybe what does the cheese store decide to put their work into? That could create a trend.
Sure. And then the customer's buying it. Yeah. Just like who's at the.
And then the end is the customer.
They can end users.
They want chili in their cheese or an ingredient. And that's going to sometimes dictate the trend. Mm-hmm. It's just this whole amalgam of things happening at once.
Exactly. But we should get back to what were we talking about, guys?
A cheesemaker spotlight.
That's right. That's what I thought. Okay, cool. Well, I'll throw it to Jess now. Then we'll circle to you, Joe.
Well, this year I had a chance to do two episodes talking about cheeses that are part of someone's heritage and history. And so those two episodes really stood out because it introduced me, and I hope a lot of other people, to the story of, in one case, it was the story of paneer. It was the interview I did with Tarush, about, his company, Sach Foods, that he and his wife, Jasleen, have. And now they have, you know, that's available like all over the country now. It's incredible. And then more recently, the episode I did about Labneh with Emiliano Tatar and his wife from Marion Park Cheese, and then Paul Farishedian from Erevan Yogurt. And the fact that these two people had... Oh my gosh, they have like a love story going on. They just really connected in so many ways. And just given everything that's going on in the world right now.
100%.
Just if you go back and listen to their story and how they met and how they come from their families come from two different parts of the world, but they share this cheese in common. And I always tell people that cheese can save the world. And, you know, just hearing them talk about Labneh and there are two companies coming together to make this cheese. I just loved talking to them.
That was a very cool episode because it actually brought up Jewish heritage a little bit, which was so cool. And I think that's what you were alluding to before. And just their story was amazing. So shout out to the listeners to go back into our archives or this year and look through the catalog and just try that episode because it was very, very good. Joe, what was your moment?
Well, I'm not that in the channel, that deeply into the channel of a lot of America. I don't mix it up that much with the American producers. So it's just kind of what I notice.
That's okay. You know? Naturally.
And so I can't help but have noticed what's going on at Peristead in the Philadelphia. I mean, they got a container. Mm-hmm. He's making cheese inside of a trailer. The creative names I love. I love the marketing and the names and the recipe ideas and just the kind of like the take no prisoners kind of approach to just the determination of that behind the cheese making effort is just impressive to me. I have yet to visit. And the same kind of thing could be said about Veronica Pedraza at Blakesville. Since it's only been open since 2020, right? What she's done is just, and then the cheeses are just knock your socks off. And then this new one that I've dream about trying one day, the Picuri Ivigna cheese. It's a fresh sheep cheese wrapped in Corsican muscat grape soaked leaves.
Ooh,
just what?
What?
Yeah, just it's like
let's try it. It's Pyrenees. What was the name?
It's called Picuri Ivigna.
Okay.
It's like probably one of the more hard to get cheeses in her range.
Okay.
But it's described as a fresh sheep cheese wrapped in Corsican muscat grape soaked leaves.
Oh, cool.
So you go on the website, you can see it. I mean, just those kind of cheeses to me just make me want to just dream. That sounded amazing, and so just you know, it has me thinking more about their work. And then I just recently read on the Insects Will Be website. You know, if you're Insects Will Be Cheesemonger website, which is rich with information, by the way,
for
those listeners who may not already know that. Like, go on the blog and just read. You'll learn. It's so much about cheese. One of the points recently in October was made about how Hidden Springs. This is Brenda Jensen's creamery out in Westby, Wisconsin, is now being revamped or, you know, it's being brought back up by a new owner, Amy, I don't know how to pronounce Amy's name, Amy Forgs. So that's just
we'll have to keep an eye on that.
Understand that.
You know? Well,
so those kinds of things seem to be impactful, I would think, because of the rare channels that they're in.
I love any opportunity to create more American sheep's milk cheeses, because that's not an easy animal. I mean, in terms of volume of milk and cheese, and we don't have a lot, I mean, compared to the goat and the cows. Mm-hmm. So I just get so excited because I have not met a sheep's milk cheese I don't like.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it sounds like an episode for next season, guys.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's a teaser. That's my only point I was going to raise about this. I was like, that sounds really awesome. Good job on finding that, because I don't know anything about it. It sounds interesting. So,
yeah.
Super cool.
Totally. Let's see what happens with that.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's time we take a quick break for our sponsors. Hey, everyone, you're listening to Cutting the Curd, and we'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Wisconsin, the state of cheese, makes half of the nation's specialty cheese and wins more awards than any other state or country. Our heritage and traditions, master cheesemaker program, and the American propensity for innovation all put Wisconsin on the cutting wedge of cheesemaking. With over 600 varieties of cheese to choose from and 5,500 national and international awards and counting, get ready to turn your refrigerator into a trophy case. Enjoying a Wisconsin cheese is basically like winning a gold medal in culinary achievement. Set your mind at cheese. When you bite into a wedge of Wisconsin Wonderful, you know it is made with the ultimate skill and passion possible. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
Hey, everyone, you're listening to Cutting the Curd. I'm your host, Kara Warren. I'm here with Jess and Joe, also Cutting the Curd hosts. They are amazing, and we are celebrating the year of 2023. We are going over everything that is memorable, and one of our next fun digs is going to be the cheese pairing bit, which, there's always one. I try to aim for one pairing per episode with the guest, and so it was hard to choose, but... I mean, one that came, there's three that I have in mind, but one was Amelia or Kat saying something about hot dogs and Rush Creek, but maybe I just imagined that. And then another one was just Tom Perry of Shelburne just shouting grilled cheese when I asked him, what's your favorite pairing? He's like, I just want a cheddar grilled cheese. I was like, okay, Tom.
I love it.
Simple, but fantastic.
Austere.
Yeah. And then on the more elegant side, Allison Lakin gave a shout out for her blue cheese, and she did a tart with toasted walnuts and caramelized onions, and it sounded like the perfect winter recipe, and I spoke to her at the beginning last year, so she's at the, you know, right before, like, 2023, 2022 line, so she made it in for this. You know, Jess, what did you feel was a great pairing that you saw? Did you have one that you wanted to give a shout out to this year?
You know, I just suck at remembering things.
Then you don't have to do it, because we can just keep chugging along here. But
you are really, you got us going. I love this. It's like,
yeah,
because I need to think about it a little bit more. But know that I did talk with two authors of books that were filled with pairings.
Marissa Mullen, right?
Marissa Mullen with her new book. And then also Tanaya.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God. Madame Fromage. How could I forget Madame Fromage? I love her. Yes.
So what I'm actually exploring on my own is more spirit pairings. And also, you know, I always just come back to a good Effie's oat cake and cheddar.
Oh, yeah.
I just like, that's to me, it's like, that's it. That's all I need for a pairing. I generally just eat cheese by itself. I'm not a big pairing person with the food, but I am with the beverage. So...
great.
You know, I had said during the interview with Marissa that I wanted to try her mom's cocktail, and that's on tap for this weekend, actually.
Oh, yeah. I like it. Okay, Joe, throwing it over to you. What's your vibe?
It is like concepts, right? Like, I'm not a pairing king either over here.
Like, you're a chef, so yeah, I mean, you just cook really great food with cheese.
I'm more inclined. Yeah, I'm more inclined to make like an accompaniment, or if I want to cook a pear down and make my own little pear compo, I'm more inclined to mess with that maybe. But I tend to go more with just a good bread, a fresh fruit, and a fruit compo, and I'll buy a simple cracker. But what I couldn't help but notice is the mes, you know, things that open doors to kind of like have you think, you know, kind of pairing. So the mezcal and cheese popularized by Julia Gross.
Oh, yeah. In the recent, she's done a great job with that stuff.
You know, just that whole, hey, why not? Why isn't this being talked about? Why not? And even I think chocolate is featured in the last spot on that in like Culture magazine.
Yeah.
But I always find the lowbrow pairings, like the potato chips or the bagged salty snacks and the gummy bears and the Gouda. Like, I find that fun. But I find it more fun than anything else, honestly. Yeah. Like, can I eat that? Like, but like, but because there's so many beautiful handmade products that are, you know, that are made for cheese that deserve a little bit of attention. But, you know, it's like almost like we're in an era where almost anything goes now.
You have to follow your cheesy heart.
Yeah, that's important.
And that's all that matters.
Yeah, express yourself. Exactly. This way. This is a way to express yourself.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think we should ever be too rigid about these things, because then we'll get stuck, and that would be terrible.
Yeah.
I'm also a fan of the potato chip and cheese thing, by the way.
Yeah, potato chip and chip.
And a little caviar.
Yeah, if you can get a little caviar. If there's ever a splurge for the caviar that's on sale.
Yes.
Once a year, I'm eating it with a potato chip.
Or know
chip.
A good friend. Shout out to Carrie and Dave.
Hey, I'm having it with a potato chip, though. That's how I'm eating it. I mean, the creme fraiche and the potato chip, but the potato chip.
Exactly. Just a little potato. Okay, now there's another segment to this that I thought we'd give a shot at, but I don't know if we actually got anything. Listener contributions? We were trying to interact with you guys out there, and we were hoping that we could get a quote. No, yes, there is. Oh, my God.
Do you have? I don't have my.
Yeah, there's a couple that wrote in and left messages. Let's see.
Because we're gonna try to be more, have a more participatory situation as we move along in this world.
We have a cheesemonger who's made some really fun posts, by the way. Carrie, Justice of the Cheese, who's out in Wisconsin, I believe. Oreos and Roquefort was mentioned.
Ooh.
And this is also mentioned with the cheesemonger Molly Hester from the Chicago area.
Yeah, I know Molly. She's cool.
Yeah. And, you know, a fried, you know, just pairing the in this realm, you know, in some Oreos and Roquefort. I've not tried that myself. I think I've had chocolate with Roquefort before.
I mean, listen, I'm down for any blue cheese at this time of year. So Roquefort, Stilton.
Yeah.
I will devour it.
I think that's a good texture pairing, too,
mm-hmm.
with the Oreo. Because the Oreo is even, it's like a little bittersweet, or it's like...
It's dry.
Yeah, it's dry, and it's a little, like, smoky cocoa. It's not like chocolate, you know?
Yeah, and I could justify a dessert wine, right? Mm-hmm. You would eat that. You would drink
dessert
that
wine,
I would dare go
champagne even, maybe. But that's kind of, I might be crazy. Some sort of sparkling, too.
But just the idea of, it sounds pretty outrageous to put an Oreo with
100%.
I mean, a Roquefort is one of the most incredible cheeses for me.
Spicy.
That's one of my desert island cheeses. I mean, I love
it. Is it really?
Yeah, I go banana. I'll get sick on Roquefort. I'll eat a whole
piece.
Wedge. Yeah, fresh. Yeah. I'll eat that till I get sick, and I don't need necessarily an Oreo with it, but I will eat it until I say mercy. I'll cry mercy on that one. Yeah.
Kara, what's your desert island cheese?
Oh shit. You know what?
I don't mean to put you on the spot.
No, no, no. I actually do know it, but it's very simple. And I've told people this, and I feel like I'm letting some people down. But as a Brooklyn girl, it's a very fresh mozzarella cheese. And it's actually a particular spot, Caputo's, on Court Street.
Mm.
They have the best freaking mozzarella that they hand make, and they leave it in water, or they leave it in salted water all day. And I swear that is my drug.
Yeah.
Easily, I could die on that. I mean, but then, you know, if I'm getting a little more sophisticated, Stilton or something like that. But, like, mozzarella's the easy
Like a warm, not... Yeah, like a warm piece.
It has just been made.
Yeah.
You know, it's there's no in between. Like, it's just a fresh, delicious piece of cheese.
Right, right.
Yeah, so that's my go-to.
Very cool.
How about you?
I have to say Comté.
Oh, wow.
I
like that.
It never fails me.
I imagine.
I like the young.
Oh, okay, I'm kidding then. Okay, I'm kidding.
No, my reaction is just like surprise at myself. I always had like the more aged, and then had a chance to go to France with Comté USA. Everybody better apply for that.
Yeah, the
scholarship every chance you can.
There's a Comté USA scholarship. Also, they were very kind to me for Thanksgiving. I forgot to give this a shout out earlier. They sent me a bottle of Côte de Rhône white wine and a piece of Comté cheese, and it was a perfect pairing.
Yes.
They're very generous and always looking to educate about their PDO. So big shout out to them for working very hard with all of us to make everyone more aware. So your Comté is your... That's your go-to.
Well, yeah. And so when I was over there, I had a chance to have a young Comté, like young, like six months.
Oh, wow. I was going to say 6 months. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, and really 6 months. Not like 6 months and then on a boat
for
a month.
And then on a boat for a few months. Okay,
yeah. And it may even have been a bit younger. And then there was, you know, going through the different profiles and just the differences in the flavor profile as it ages. I've just never been disappointed in a well-cared-for piece of Comté. So, yeah, totally. And I do think that's another trend that it just came to me, is how these consortiums or organizations really support people in the cheese industry. They so like the Comté USA people, they love to educate people. They will keep you in their fold.
Yeah.
And they keep widening the community. And the same thing with the Wisconsin cheese people. I know they're doing a really great job at educating people about Wisconsin cheese and sending cheese out and sending out materials. And it's just a really wonderful way. You know, we see more and more ways that people are taking upon themselves to educate each other.
100%. Yeah. It's a great way to get educational sources on the cheeses that we all know and love.
Yep.
Was there anything else from any other listeners, or was that's the one we got. That's what we're sticking with for now.
Well, there were some other inputs of some notes we got about wanting to, understand how BIPOC professionals who are just starting versus, you know, getting into the industry.
Sure.
Some
sure.
pathways, you sure. know, we want to always make sure we're
being diverse and giving people chances for sure.
And explaining and emphasizing just ways in for everybody and upward mobility within all of our work and let, just invite everybody to take part in that.
And I feel like the cheese industry, especially at the retail level and then the entry level of sales, is looking for that already. So it's just a matter of time before it trickles up. And people keep pushing those doors down. It's like everything else in life. We're all evolving. So, I'm excited to hear. And I mean, last week I had the New Mexico Cheese Guild on talking about indigenous cheeses. And I think that was the first time we had ever even talked to people from a new region in the U.S. like that. Like the Southwest? My God.
Mm-hmm. Well, New Mexico as a state is one of the top milk producing states in the country,
right?
Not for artisanal cheese,
but for just milk,
but for milk. And I mean, in the top five, I think.
Yes. That was the stat that they gave us. So they're trying to figure out how to build an added value product and creating a cheese guild there, which is one of the things we'll talk about in a little bit. But, it's cool to see where the world is going. So I'm glad someone wrote in about that. Cause it's a good point. And we're all listening, I think. That's the cool part.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's never been a better time. Mm-hmm. And there's work to be done. But ears are open.
Yes,
exactly. Well, and space has to be made. And, that's the thing that we need to make sure is happening. It's not a fad.
No, it's not a fad. Another thing I put out there, but I'm not sure either one of you came up with one, was the pop culture, cheese and pop culture bit. I had to stretch it because I put the Schitt's Creek moment from 2021, but I finally saw the meme this year. So I was like, this kind of counts, where they're folding in the cheese.
It's a good spot.
But, I feel like I see cheese and pop culture all the time. But then, it's not like you're writing it down like, there was cheese there for a moment. So, I take it no one else had anything else, right? Should we just move along into the next thing?
I couldn't put my finger on anything. That was like from last year. There's things like, like Monty Python.
It's a stretch. All right, we'll do better next year,
I don't know if it's popular culture, but like this whole thing about smearing stuff on boards, like
what?
it was butter, and then there was a cream cheese board, all those boards, and smearing things on boards. And
sure.
I feel like, maybe that's gone now.
Is TikTok a pop culture moment? Do we talk Dare Talk? I don't know anything about TikTok. I'm not a TikToker.
I think.
Sorry, guys.
Absolutely, it is, and I'm not in that. I'm not on that channel a lot at all. I don't have.
See, look at us. We're bad. We need more information from our listeners.
I think absolutely there's some noise being made out there.
Yeah. No, there's certain things
that's
the one that I don't really want to talk about, but I'll give a mention because it came up in my research was girl dinner.
No,
I hate that. I hate that. We'll just skip over that one. Okay. Next. So, so then the next thing is, I want to talk about achievements and awards and cheese. And, you know, we had some interesting ones this year. For me, it was, I think, Joe, maybe you had it also, was the ACS. Or Jessica, you too mentioned it to me that, like, there was all these cool smaller producers that won instead of, like, majorly giant cheese companies. So I felt like that was a nice moment. And then I also always just love ACS. So, but did you guys have a shout out for any one person, one cheesemaker that you really thought was, or anything else that would be, cool to mention? I mean, actually, Alpinage, who was on the show in the last few years twice now, once with Jess, once with myself, is a new raclette cheesemaker out of Wisconsin, Orphy. Big, again, congratulations to him for doing what he's doing. He won an award this year. So, like, there we go. That's one. I have a moment. There it is.
I barely got to taste the first, second, third place winners. So I just take note on the styles, and I see like if that's an indication of the category still being very strong and something that you know we want to have, like an Alpine style. It was Saint Malachy was an Alpine style cheese.
Oh yeah, I love that cheese.
So that category is still strong, and then now we're you know there's plenty of good examples of that cheese from the USA. Second place was a Tome style cheese, Sequatchie Cove, right? That was a Cumberland. And the third place was Pleasant Ridge Reserve. Well, it was a three-way tie between three, which is unique also. So you kind of had like five cheeses in the top finishers as opposed to three. You had like two bonus cheeses. But Pleasant Ridge Reserve was one of the three third places, a Prairie Tome sheep's milk cheese from Green Dirt Farm out in western Missouri. And then you had a basket molded Chev goat's milk cheese from Pure Luck Dairy. Out of Texas, and I had not tasted all of those at the ACS. It's hard to locate them. I was, you know, just I did the best I could, but I didn't get to eat them all.
I wasn't able to attend ACS this year, but I was just amazed at the geography, the spread across the country of the winners. I mean, the different states that were represented.
Yeah, you have Pennsylvania, right? You have Tennessee. You have Wisconsin. You have Missouri and you have Texas.
Yeah, that's a spread.
Yeah. You don't see New Jersey in there. What's
yeah.
What's
Joe, what are you doing? Talk to your people in Jersey. Talk to your cousin Frankie and Uncle Louie.
Yeah, cousin Frankie and Uncle Louie. They're eating all the provolone.
Jesus. Yeah.
But so much cheese that we talked about today coming out of Pennsylvania. I mean, it's just, I think it's pretty cool. I mean, we talked about Perry's Stead. Then we have, you know, the Farm at Doe Run with St. Malachy. We talked about the Labneh, that's also made in the Philadelphia area. So you have Marion Park cheese and Erevan yogurt. So we have like new meccas, like the beginning of like new epicenters for the dairy industry and cheese making.
I'm totally mispronouncing that word. St. Malachy. I got to get that right.
Is that how you
say Malachy? We don't know. But you know what? Maybe we'll have them on the show at some point to correct them because I'm constantly mispronouncing stuff. And it takes till you have a good conversation to get that right, I feel like. So we'll keep that as a teaser for next year, too. Look, we got three now. I like it. Way to go, us. So my next funsy topic is then what are we anticipating for next year in terms of, we talked about cheese trends for this year, but they kind of fall already into next year. But is there anything else that we're like, we super want to point out that we hope happens more next year? I was talking about Cheese Guilds a moment ago, and Jess and I in a pre-chat really sparked a note about that, how we are hoping more Cheese Guilds happen. And that if people listen to that last episode I did, there's really a template there for the Cheese Guilds of each state to really work on legislation and to, you know, build a better industry by working with their dairy farmers directly and helping them figure out what their needs are. So anyway, I thought it was pretty freaking cool. What do you guys got? Anything on your side?
Yeah. Well, just in general, I feel like the resources are there, right? So it's a weird example, but like...
No weird examples.
Look at Uber.
Yes.
Uber it's your connect. We didn't manufacture a billion cars or a million cars, whatever, how many cars.
Too many cars, Joe.
We didn't have an open call. It was just, there was already a need. The cars were there. The people who wanted to drive, we just connected it, right?
Correct.
So the resources, I believe, are there to do so many things. So collaborate, call, like for instance, if you want, like if you're a cheese shop, have a class, call one of your vendors, have a fondue night. Like these things are, they're there for you.
Right.
So just, you know, just connect a few dots. You could probably charge admission.
Totally.
It just win-win-win for everybody. Win-win for the producer that wants to tell their story. Win-win for your crowd. Win-win for the house.
Yeah.
Everybody wins. So connect some dots. Put a little bit of work will pay off in dividends.
Mm-hmm.
I hope this is what the guilds are going to do. Like
Maybe.
These things are in place. Just how can we connect it?
It's knowledge is power, man. It's the education. It's spreading that out and like knowing that you have access to these people. Cheese is such a small universe. Yeah. Like all they have to do is look up the one thing and you'll get an email like 24 hours later, I feel like. So yeah, just reach out to your producers. That's I think what Joe is really saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think for me, the formation of guilds is a way to help fight the rising costs of doing business in farming and making cheese and selling cheese and having a cheese shop. And I think the only way, to get to be successful is going to have to be strengthening your local and regional markets and food systems, because it's just getting really, really expensive.
Right.
To own land, buy land, you know, maintain equipment, just getting your cheese to a customer. Strengthen numbers and like sharing resources. Also, at the same time, you know, I'm looking at how many independent cheese shops opened since COVID.
Oh, right. Yeah. Sure.
It's been really amazing. And I know we've lost
a bunch, but this is okay. Like, it's because the pandemic pushed people out of the major cities that we now have these smaller regional areas really getting, not built up, but having these awesome independent stores.
Yeah.
As the biggers get bigger, it creates a vacuum where the smalls are needed.
Yeah. And they're people community centers, right? Yeah. Like cheese shops aren't just cheese shops. They're community centers. They're not, right. You know,
And they're really great places to collaborate. Like, yes. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah. And some of them have opened in some of the more expensive more expensive cities. So like one just opened in Brooklyn a couple of months ago or a second location. And that's the other thing is people are opening second locations.
Fair.
And that's really interesting. And I also love how people are so transparent with their story that like the Antonelli's like in opening this second location, they talk about how they had a second location at one time and like their journey to get to this point. And the thing about websites, I think this is a big thing to look forward to. More and more retail websites and producer websites are really sources of education and history and become like encyclopedias of cheese. They're so great. I know from when I do a class, I have my go-tos of like across the country and across the global of like, they're like, you know, everything I would want to know about cheese, I can just like look on some of these e-commerce and retailers and you get their take on it too, which is really great.
That's true. I guess all of that has improved a lot since when we were all kind of starting. Like the copy is not just like garbage from some random source. Like maybe now the producers have put more time and effort into the websites because they had to sell cheese during the pandemic or they just were all modernizing and now we have better websites.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like I want to give a shout out to Jessica Sennett and the Cheese Grotto. I just went on her website recently, which makes a great Christmas gift for people. She's not paying me to say that. I'm just thinking about how we can uplift everyone, not just cheese, but the tools as well.
Sure.
But her website is really full of so much great information. And if you're just selling like one product, but there's so much you can provide that gives context into
that's
this
cheese
industry.
Grotto, the little cheese garage.
Yeah, yeah, your little cave.
I was going to say we should tell the listeners
thank
you. Yeah, so it's like a
little bird
countertop
for your
countertop.
It's an affinage. It protects your cheese from drying out.
Yeah, yeah, it's like a little countertop cheese cave.
Yeah,
and but there's so many out there.
Cool idea.
It's just so cool. It's so cool. So much information up there.
I don't have much else. Then I think we've really covered a lot. Is there any last thoughts for the listeners that you guys want to talk about before we say sayonara for the 2023?
Well, I do want people to know that sometimes our episodes are created because, like the episode you just did, Kara, about the cheese shop in New Mexico, it's because people let us know, right? And so I just, like, if people have cool things that are happening that they want to, like, tip us onto.
Totally.
I would love to hear it. Like, episodes are out there waiting to be created.
Absolutely. I think the best way to get to us, by the way, in case you never make it to an end of an episode, is Instagram us, direct message us at Cutting the Curd. We look at that all the time. Joe, how about you? Any last words?
I think just eat more fondue would cover a lot of things.
Eat more fondue, huh? Yeah. What is your ratio? What are your cheeses and more are your cheeses? Not the ratio so much. More, what are the cheeses that you're good? Because you're a Swiss man.
Yeah.
So you live and breathe the Swiss life.
I lean Swiss on the fondue.
But I'm saying, so then you got to tell me, what is it?
So it's always 25% Emmentaler.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And then the 75% could be a mix of, usually there's a Gruyere.
Mm-hmm.
Involved.
Le Gruyere
AOP.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I want that.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Gotta hear it. Le Gruyere AOP.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, one of our specialties maybe could be, you know, one of our other mountain cheeses could be Yush, could be Hornbacher, Rockflower.
It's kind of what's in your fridge.
It's what I'm sitting on. But and then okay. Yeah, you know, and then I'll mix between young and super flavorful, because if you go too much one way or the other, then the balance isn't there.
And then is it a white wine or a kirsch you throw in, or both?
So white wine is in the beginning. You know, typically I've done it with a dry pear cider, a dry apple cider also works great.
Very cool.
And in the end, I do like finishing it with a kirsch that's from Alsace or from the Black Forest, you know.
Cool.
You know, a real Kirsch, not the stuff I did shots with in college.
Yeah, please don't do that.
You know, not that stuff. Like real.
I think that would make everyone's like, ugh.
Yeah.
No,
just at the end.
Yeah.
And then in between, a little lemon juice helps.
Okay.
I think it enhances the flavor, but also shortens the protein, and you get less of a stringy pulp.
There's so much chemistry in this.
Yeah,
I know no one thinks about, well, people do. They obsess about it, I'm sure, actually. Yeah. But
more chemistry in 2024.
Yeah. Oh, really?
I would like to know more on the
more
science
technicals?
Of cheese. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Why not? I mean, why not?
And let's see how that goes.
Explain.
Although, you know, there are a lot of people out there, we have listeners who have huge platforms on Facebook or YouTube, who are running like groups up for home cheesemakers. I think that's another trend. Like, a lot of people are making cheese at home.
Really?
Mm. Yeah. And
I wouldn't
that's
dare
really
do that.
Growing.
That's so funny.
But it's a lot of chemistry and, like, you know, the science of how to do this and why did my cheese, you know, it's almost like Reddit threads. Like,
oh,
I made this cheese at home and it came out like this. What do I do? And crowdsourcing for solutions. But I'd love to understand that more.
So much madness.
Yeah.
Well, if you want to join the madness, Jessica.
I have some thoughts.
Okay.
I have some people in mind.
Okay.
So hopefully more,
oh my
more
God.
Cheese science in 2024.
Okay. You heard it here from Jessica. I will not be doing that.
Yeah.
I only like to do fun stuff. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway. All right, guys. I think this was a great, thank you, Joe, for coming up. First of all, Joe, applaud for Joe for being our host now, our newest host and officially on now. And Jessica for supporting me all the time, because she's really doing that for me. And then now I'm going to do the outro, if that's okay by you guys. Let's say goodbye. I know. I've had such a good year. So please follow us at Cutting the Curd and HRN at Heritage Radio or Heritage_Radio. And please listen and subscribe to Cutting the Curd wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, don't forget to give us a 5-star review wherever you listen to your podcast, because it matters. It helps us so much. Happy holidays and eat more cheese.
Cutting the Curd is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode. Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.